Good afternoon. This is Tamara, continuing with the Decatur Herald and Review for Thursday, October 1st. We'll begin with some national news. A sluggish start for U.S. stocks following a rough quarter. Stocks are mostly lower in early trading as the market comes off its worst quarter in 4 years. Energy stocks bucked the downward trend early Thursday and moved higher among the price of oil. ExxonMobil and Chevron rose the most in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the first few minutes of trading. The Dow was off 8 points, less than 0.1%, to 16,274. The Standard & Poor's 500 index slipped 2 points, or 0.1%, to 1,917. The NASDAQ Composite fell 23 points, or 0.5%, to 4,595. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 2.03%. Ukraine to pull out small-caliber weapons from war-torn east. Minsk, Belarus. Ukrainian government forces will pull out small-caliber weapons from the war-torn east in 2 days' time if the ceasefire holds, the defense minister said Thursday. A military conflict between government forces and Russia-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine erupted in April 2014, leaving more than 8,000 people dead and 2 million displaced. Russia, Ukraine, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe on Tuesday agreed on the withdrawal of tanks and other weapons from the front line, with rebel leaders in Donetsk and Luhansk signing on to the agreement on Wednesday. The deal reached Tuesday in Minsk, Belarus, by the so-called contact group calls for tanks, artillery, and mortars up to 120 millimeters to be pulled back and at least 15 kilometers, 9 miles, from the front line. The withdrawal is expected to take 39 days. Ukrainian Defense Minister Stefan Poltorak said on Thursday that Kiev will pull out all small-caliber weapons on Saturday if the ongoing ceasefire holds. A February deal calling for a pullback of large-caliber artillery has been largely observed. We are working to prepare the withdrawal, Poltorak said. Ukraine insists that we are complying with all provisions of the Minsk Accords. The leaders of Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany, who negotiated the February agreement, are meeting in Paris on Friday to try to push forward a political settlement for eastern Ukraine. Speaking at a televised meeting at the Kremlin on Thursday, Putin blamed Kiev for flaunting the peace agreement, saying that Ukraine has failed to adopt an amnesty law and negotiate with rebels on how to hold local elections in the east. Still, he sounded hopeful before Friday's talks. It's a long way before the crisis is resolved, but there are indications that give hope that it can be dealt with, he said. A French diplomatic official who asked not to be identified because he wasn't authorized to speak publicly said on Thursday that France supports autonomy for the East as long as it stays part of the Ukraine. The official also said that Paris would speak out for lifting the sanctions if the peace accords are fulfilled. Ukraine has recently adopted a bill devolving powers to the regions, which attracted the ire of nationalists who thought it was a concession for the separatists. Rebels in their turn were unhappy with the proposed reform, saying that did not envisage autonomy for them. Now some articles from the opinion column. Mary Hunt, The Fine Art of the Effective Complaint. Are you ever frustrated with customer service? Have you been ripped off, taken to the cleaners, hung out to dry by a store or service provider? To claim the title of savvy customer, you need know-how and confidence to make sure that no matter what, no one ever gets your hard-earned money without your permission. It's all about the fine art of complaining. Start easy. Make at least one good-faith attempt to reach a resolution for your problem at the customer service level. Don't threaten. Simply state your case and the resolution you expect. Take notes. Keep a paper trail that includes the names of the people you speak with, their titles, and phone numbers. Be nice. No matter your method of communication, do not make threats or use foul language. Wait until your anger subsides. Stay calm. Keep it professional. Right to the top. If you cannot reasonably resolve the issue, head straight to the top. Find the name and address of the highest level person in the company, the president or CEO. Don't waste your time working up the ladder. State your case. Be very clear on what the problem is, what you have done to attempt a resolution, and exactly how you want this resolved. Do you want the item replaced? A refund? A redo? Use strong language. You want to keep your letter short but powerful. Use words like shocking, appalled, outraged, and egregious. These are attention getters, so use them if they fairly describe your situation. Do not use vulgar language, slang, or profanity. Always remain dignified. Name a date. Give a specific date that it is at least 2 weeks hence by which you expect this matter will be resolved. Make it easy to respond. Be sure to give the president a way to reach you. Give your name, address, phone number, and the best time to call. Proofread. Some of us, yeah, that would be me, cannot see our own spelling and grammatical errors. Find someone who will proof your finished letter. There's nothing like poor grammar and typos to detract, devalue, and dilute your message. Keep working on it until your letter is impeccable. Now the president will take your matter seriously. Be bold. Use bold and capital letters when you add this to the lower right area of the envelope for immediate and personal attention, all in caps. Be sure to keep originals of all your documentation, such as paid receipts, warranties, photos, and other items that support your position. Make photocopies for attachments, but hang them on the originals. One last thing, always say thank you. Do that in advance as a way of letting the other person know you have the utmost confidence that he or she will do the right thing. Remember that it's in their best interests as well as yours that you do not go through life with a bad taste in your mouth because of a transaction going wrong. Dear pharmacist, high histamine can affect health. Susie Cohen for the Herald and Review. Histamine can cause allergies, and it is found in hundreds of foods that you consume daily, but an allergy is different than what I want to share with you today. An allergy causes an almost immediate reaction to the food you just ate, whereas an intolerance is a reaction that occurs later. Why later? Because the blood levels of histamine need to spike for the reaction to take place. You are reacting to histamine, not the food itself. See the difference? High blood histamine levels will cause chronic health conditions, which could be lifelong. In contrast, a true food allergy results in symptoms within a few minutes, like lip swelling, itchiness, sneezing, hives, diarrhea, and possibly anaphylaxis. A problem with histamine breakdown can cause many disorders that you would never connect to histamine, since you associate histamine with sneezing and runny nose. You could have a problem with your genes, for example, and this would cause histamine levels to rise. You may be taking a medication that increases histamine levels. I have a longer version of this article that I can email to you if you sign up for my website at susiecohen.com. If your physician doesn't tease out the problem of high histamine, you may suffer with migraines, cluster headaches, Hashimoto's, anxiety, asthma, irritable bowel syndrome, dermatographia, vertigo, abnormal menstrual cycles, and much more. Histamine isn't a bad guy. It's needed to create stomach acid and to perfect your gut motility so that you can get food through you properly. DAO, or diamine oxidase, is an enzyme that is outside the cell, termed extracellular, and it breaks down histamine. Supplements are sold at health food stores nationwide, and you should ask your physician about them. They are not right for everyone. However, if you have a histamine intolerance, they may improve symptoms dramatically. I leave this to be decided by you and your physician. Avoiding histamine-rich foods can impact your situation as well, especially if you avoid fermented foods and leftovers. The following foods are high in histamine or provoke excessive release from your mast cells. Either way, it's not good, so reduce histamine by avoiding farmed seafood, including shellfish, smoked meats, bologna, eggs, fermented dairy products like buttermilk, yogurt, cheese, and kefir, citrus fruits, dried fruits, apricots, cherries, cranberries, prunes, currants, raisins, and dates, tomatoes and tomato sauce, spinach. It's high in oxalates anyway, so keep this to a minimum. Vinegar-containing foods such as salad dressing, pickles, relish. Sulfites. Vegans eat a lot of fermented foods such as tofu and tempeh. These can raise histamine levels and cause anxiety and skin problems. Reducing histamine can help. Finally, people with hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's thyroiditis or any other autoimmune disorder such as multiple sclerosis may have been misinformed about a healthy diet. Fermented foods may not be wise for you after all. These types of food are super high in histamine, and this can increase your symptoms. Symptoms should resolve within a month, and if not, you can take DAO supplements. There are many brands, just buy what you like. Susie Cohen can be reached at www.dearpharmacist.com. The GOP Brat Pack won. Now what? The Republican Party's Freedom Caucus, which has several less charitable nicknames on Capitol Hill, is the dog that caught the car. Now what? Having sort of unseated Speaker John Boehner, these 37 or so uber-conservative House members are now scrambling for a real leader. Except that they aren't really, because they have no one else with the skills, experience, or legislative record to offer. The Brat Pack, as they are also known, had a leader in Boehner, but were too self-obsessed to recognize it or to see much beyond their own immediate gratification and pontifical aspirations. They came to Washington not to govern but to fight. But what does one make of a little boys' club with nothing to show for themselves other than a record of disruption and a talent for tantrums? These are the guys who couldn't get a prom date, one House member said to me privately. They'd rather rape and pillage than do the hard work. They can't get to first base, much less hit a home run. This person is plainly not a fan, but nor are the other Republican congressmen who roll their eyes about caucus members who lecture them about the Constitution and rant about the debt. Oh, thanks for telling us, moron, says my hilltop muse. We didn't know. Now they can brag that they've deposed the Speaker himself, which isn't really true. Boehner probably could have prevailed in getting reelected, but what for? His leadership style has always been to lead where his members want to go. Unfortunately, this led to the shutdown of 2013, and he wasn't willing to lead them there again, especially not over, of all things, defunding Planned Parenthood. The most pro-life speaker in history knew this was the wrong battle at exactly the wrong time. The opposition won, not because of superior skills or strategy, but because Boehner is far more principled than they. He just plays a longer game and understands what these pretenders are incapable of seeing. Shutting down the government hurts Republicans, and it will hurt the GOP's chances of winning the White House next year. Meanwhile, the narrative that Boehner was an ineffective leader, a storyline long advanced by the Freedom Caucus and beloved by President Obama, hint, hint, boys, only a conservative could love Boehner's record, which included cutting $2.4 trillion from the deficit, mostly from the spending side and without tax increases. Boehner has been a leader in free trade and is the only speaker to successfully sue the president over separation of powers. Finally, and ironically, he was a tireless campaigner and fundraiser, even for his persecutors. Boehner's successor will almost certainly be Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who was one of the self-declared young guns of the House, a posse that also included House Ways and Means Chairman Paul Ryan and former Representative Eric Cantor of Virginia. Cantor, the then-majority leader, was defeated in 2014 by economics professor and now Freedom Caucus member Dave Brat. The number two position of majority leader is also up for grabs among Majority Whip Steve Scalise, known for having once spoken to a white supremacist group, and Georgia Rep. Tom Price, who has received the powerful endorsements from Ryan and U.S. Representative Jeb Hensarling, Republican Texas. Missing from the contest is the lone woman in the GOP leadership, Kathy McMorris Rogers, who considered running but announced Monday night that she would not. Currently the first woman to chair the House Republican Conference since its creation, she also would have been the first female majority leader in history. Democrat Nancy Pelosi was minority leader before becoming speaker in 2007. There is a sense among many women on the Hill that the boys won again. As in, we've got a girl in the number four job. We don't need her in number two. Although this may be true to some extent, others see an alternative scenario, a long game strategy in the Boehner tradition. Rogers is well liked and may have elected to bide her time. She's a steady presence and a leader to be reckoned with, and she's not going anywhere. The Freedom Caucus, alas, isn't either, thanks to gerrymandering that makes their job secure, except from an even more conservative Republican challenger. One hopes for sanity's sake that voters in the relevant districts will begin to see that though they love a fighter, they need one who has something to offer upon winning other than whining. Kathleen Parker at WashingtonPost.com. From the editorial column, Decatur again shows its generosity. Decatur is a generous community, a trait that we often witness. There was another example last weekend as a new playground emerged in about 5 hours at the old King's Orchard Community Center. There's only one way to describe the new playground: really cool. However, what's even more impressive is the way it came to be. Saturday marked the 23rd time Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois built a playground in the state. Logistical help was provided by Kaboom, a national nonprofit agency dedicated to bringing balance and active play to children growing up in poverty. Erecting the playground involved about 200 volunteers. Blue Cross Blue Shield provided many of the volunteers along with about $90,000 of the cost. Those volunteers were joined by droves of local volunteers from Archer Daniels Midland Company, Caterpillar Incorporated, and others. Many of these local volunteers served as team leaders on a dozen work crews that transformed mountains of mulch into a playground bed, created a pathway into the park from Union Street, and readied 10 raised garden beds for planting vegetables. The local fundraising surpassed the $8,500 match needed and exceeded $20,000. Old King's Orchard Community Center Board President Alita Graham said the extra funds allowed the center to upgrade the stage and to tuck away some maintenance money for Peace Park. "This community loves to give," she said. The event was aided by the Good Samaritan Inn, which hosted all of the workers for a lunch that was largely donated by local businesses. Area residents will have more opportunities to show their generosity in the weeks and months ahead. On October 9th, the 14th annual WSOY Community Food Drive will be held at the Airport Plaza Kroger. The goal this year is $1.04 million of food. This event, which requires about 200 volunteers and features a day-long radio broadcast on WSOY, has set a record each year since it began in 2002. That doesn't mean, however, that success is guaranteed. A year ago, the food drive surpassed the $1 million mark, a remarkable achievement for a community the size of Decatur. But that only happens if everyone gets involved in one way or another. There is no donation too small to make a difference. The same holds true for the annual United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois campaign, which is currently in process. The need to fund programs that help citizens move to self-sufficiency is greater than ever. The new playground is evidence of the area's generous spirit, and there will be more examples added to a long list in the next few months. Now the death notices for Thursday, October 1st. Carruthers, Robert Spencer Sr., 65, Decatur, Air King Incorporated employee, died September 24th. Memorial services, 11 a.m. Saturday, Solid Rock Full Gospel Church. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Send condolences, GracelandFairlawn.com. Clark. Leanna Marie Clark of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, passed away September 1st in her home. A celebration of her life will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, October 4th, at Nelson Park Pavilion, No. 1, 2475 East Pavilion Drive, Decatur, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Macon County Animal Shelter or SIU Foundation Simmons Cancer Institute Side-by-Side Wellness Program. Funerals pending for Thursday, October 1st. Burries, Lily P., 56, Decatur, died Wednesday, September 30th. Walker Funeral Service in Chapel. Lexi Cook, 82, Moequa, died Wednesday, September 30th. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon. Winfred Sturgill, 85, Decatur, died Tuesday, September 29th. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Harold R. Westerfield, 86, McLean, died Wednesday, September 30th, Peasley Quirum Funeral Home, Atlanta. Esther I. Wilking, 85, Decatur, died Wednesday, September 30th, Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Funerals today, Thursday, October 1st. Donald R. Guffey, 88, Decatur, 11 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Teresa Hobson Larimer, 85, Decatur, formerly of Blue Mound, 10 a.m. in Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Stonington. James Harold Kirby, 65, Decatur, 10 a.m. in Moran and Gable Funeral Home. Granville Ramsey, 87, Hinsboro, 7 p.m. in Oakland Christian Church. Richard E. Stroker, 86, Decatur, 11 a.m. in North Fork Cemetery. Loretta White, 90, Decatur, 11:30 a.m. in Christ United Methodist Church. Maddie L. Matthews, Decatur, departed this life on Saturday, September 26th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services celebrating her life will be held with a visitation Friday, October 2nd from 5 to 7 p.m., with a memorial service at 7 p.m. at the Greater Mount Olive Baptist Church. Homegoing celebration will be 11 a.m. Saturday, October 3rd at the Greater Mount Olive Baptist Church, Burial Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. WalkerFS.com. Rosetta E. Lee Michaels, 92, of Decatur, passed away Monday, September 28th at Liberty Village, Clinton, Illinois. Online condolences may be made at calvertmemorial.com. A memorial service will be held Sunday, October 4th at 2 p.m. at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, Illinois, with J. Kent Hickerson officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at 1 p.m. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton assisted with the family with cremation rites. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Autism Speaks. Iona Fern Murphy, 89, of Wapella, passed away 3:40 a.m. September 30th at Heritage Manor, Normal, Illinois. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 3rd, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Illinois, with J. Kent Hickerson officiating. Burial will follow at Long Point Cemetery, Wapella, Illinois. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Wapella Fire Department, the American Diabetes Association, or OSF Hospice. Online condolences may be made at calvertmemorial.com. Arthur G. Wilmert, 79, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, September 29th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Private family graveside services to celebrate Arthur's life will be held. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to National MS Society, P.O. Box 4527, New York, New York, 10163. The family of Arthur G. Wilmert is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Please view the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at gracelandfairlawn.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for Thursday, October 1st. Now a letter to the editor. Everyone must work to stop domestic violence. Each month is designated for a special cause, and in some months, there are many causes. October is nationally recognized as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Does that mean anything to you? Have you ever talked to a victim of domestic violence? Many of you may be thinking, no, I don't associate with those kinds of people. Wrong. It happens to your neighbor, your own family members, your best friend, your child's teacher, the teenager down the street, the elderly man or woman next door to you, the person sitting next to you in church each Sunday. Victims of domestic violence come from all ages, race, cultures, and social backgrounds. Take a moment and think about what you would do or how you would feel if you found out it was your son or daughter, your brother or sister, mom or dad, who was the one being abused. Would you be there to offer your support? As a community, we must take all responsibility. We must all take responsibility in doing our part. We must all work collectively to help put an end to this inexcusable crime. We must begin setting an example that we are not going to tolerate domestic violence in our community. Get involved. Call the police. Offer your support instead of blaming the victims. Be a positive role model to your children by enforcing positive discipline and reaching out to them in a nurturing and loving manner. Insist that abusers be held accountable. Mark your calendars and plan to attend our annual candle lighting ceremony at 7 p.m. Thursday, October 8th at Grace United Methodist Church, 901 North Main Street. Let's fill the church with all those who are taking a stand against domestic violence in our community. Terry Ducey, Director, Dove Domestic Violence Program. We'll finish today's reading with some national news. Winning $310.5 million Powerball ticket sold in Michigan. The winning ticket to $310.5 million Powerball jackpot was sold in a small town in southwestern Michigan, Three Rivers. Michigan lottery officials are urging the winner to step forward. The jackpot can be paid over 30 years, or the winner can choose a lump sum of about $197 million before taxes. The ticket in Wednesday night's Powerball drawing was sold at the Three Rivers West Shell gas station in Three Rivers, 30 miles south of Kalamazoo. Three Rivers is just minutes from the Indiana border, so the winner might be from out of state. Liz Smith, who works at the gas station, says it's just crazy to sell such a large winning ticket in a small town. The numbers are 21, 39, 40, 55, and 59, and the Powerball is 17. Remains of 18th century slaves to be reburied in New York, Albany, New York. The skeletal remains of more than a dozen 18th century African American slaves unearthed in upstate New York a decade ago will be reburied. The Times Union of Albany reports that organizers of the reburial project are asking artists and craftspeople to submit proposals to design and create 14 wooden containers that the remains will be buried in. The containers and remains will lie in state at the Schuyler Mansion in Albany on June 17th and will be reburied the next day at a cemetery in Menons, just north of the city. 13 of the skeletal remains were unearthed in 2005 during a municipal sewer line project near what was once the Hudson River estate of the prominent Schuyler family. Since then, the remains have been stored at the State Museum. The latest. Suspect won't appear at church shooting meeting. Attorneys in the federal government's case against a white man accused in the Charleston church shootings, Dylan Roof, will meet with a judge, but the defendant won't attend the session. 21-year-old Dylan Roof faces dozens of federal charges, including hate crimes, stemming from the June 17 shootings at Emmanuel AME Church. Attorneys will meet in Charleston on Thursday, but Roof has waived his right to appear. In new court documents posted online late Wednesday, Roof also waived his rights to a speedy trial in the case. Under federal law, a trial must be held within 70 days of a defendant's indictment, and Roof was indicted in July. Jury selection in the case is currently set to begin next month. Attorney meetings, like the one set for Thursday, usually deal with evidentiary and scheduling issues. This has been Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Thursday, October 1st. I hope to read with you again soon.